is August 15, 2025, 11:55 a.m. on the Clemenson appeal. We just finished the direct examination of Ms. Olson. Now moving on to any cross from Ms. Oda. Did you have any questions you wanted to ask?
A few, please.
Okay.
See,
I just promoted Cecilia back to a panelist, so it should just be a few seconds for her to unmute and start her video.
Yeah.
Okay.
There she is.
So there's just a few concepts that I wanted to go over and to clarify. Are you familiar with the general permit history of this parcel, that it started out as a danger tree permit and it's evolved to a SDAP type 2?
Yes.
Is it typical at all to have with an after the fact permit, or even not, but with evaluations and analysis by the county and more reports from applicants for changes of permitting types to change over the course of analysis?
It's not typical, but it does happen dependent on, sometimes we get applicants that apply for the wrong permit type, and during an intake screening or completeness review, we'll have to change the permit type. Sometimes after a first cycle of review, it's determined that it's the wrong permit type. So it is something we run into, but I would say it's not super common.
Okay, understood. And it, with this case, anyways, let's see. The applicant also has changed plans and concepts. Do you think that's typical when somebody applies for a permit and they have an idea, and then cost, permitting, time, effort comes into play, and they see what's actually can be done and what they want to? Is that normal?
It is, yeah. Oftentimes, comments or corrections that are issued through the different divisions during permit review result in redesign. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there different notice requirements and public comment requirements for different permitting types?
There are, yeah, and it is dependent on what is proposed or what the scope of work is. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that the process of determining from the danger tree permit that excess work was done, and then the county trying to evaluate and work with the applicant to see which permit fit the work done the best, is like an adequate representation of what occurred, and just trying to figure out that whole process takes time.
And I don't know the justification for why Sean O'Leary would have determined that an SDAP grading one was necessary. And I don't know if there's any records of why that determination was made.
Mm-hmm. But regardless, with more analysis by you and other county employees, it was decided to change course for a better fitting permit.
Yeah, for procedural reasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see here. With the public comments, concern that there are comments missing from the record, could that be possible due to the changing of permit types through the whole process of over the years?
It shouldn't be because of the change of permit type, because when we change a permit type, it retains all of the information that was on there previously. So, yeah, it would not be necessarily because of that.
Okay. Were public comments taken into consideration for during the review, and did it influence the review at all?
They, to my knowledge, they were a factor for the SEPA determination and some of the conditions that resulted in the SEPA determination, but the for stormwater review purposes and how drainage is developed or designed, there weren't public comments that altered how I issued my decision of approval for stormwater.
Okay. And quick summary, what do you remember were the main problems with drainage, stormwater concerns of the work that was done, of cutting trees, stumping, grading?
Yeah. In an existing forested condition, the trees that are existing retain a lot of rain when it rains. And so removing those trees and any need of vegetation and taking out those root systems that would normally absorb the water causes an increase in stormwater runoff. Which, if not properly mitigated, can pollute our waterways, which is what we're trying to avoid.
Okay. And what mitigation has been done or mitigation is proposed or conditioned for this permit to mitigate those impacts?
So with this, we did what's called like a technical deviation request because one of the designs is a little atypical where they're using an existing channel to create somewhat of a detention system, which would have a weir to control the way that the water flows out of it. And so that is to have the partially so that the project can, because it was split up into basins, would provide flow control to meet one of the minimum requirements for stormwater.
And then there was just testimony earlier about calculations and numbers, depth, soil, acreage. For this type of a project with rural forested to pasture, are exact numbers essential for this type of analysis, or is there a range that if they meet this threshold, then this is required. If they meet that threshold, then this is required.
So there is it's 3/4 of an of native vegetation that's con 3/4 of an acre, sorry, I should use the unit in there, that would be converted to lawn or landscaping, or 2.5 acres that would be converted into pasture. And that is those thresholds exist within census urbanized areas. That is because the county has a permit through the state Department of Ecology to operate what's called an MS4 system. It is the system of stormwater pipes and stuff like that. And as part of our requirements with our permit with the state, our permit coverage map includes all census urbanized areas. Census urbanized areas have to meet the requirements that the state establishes for stormwater. So it's 5,000 square feet or more of hard surface creation, and then those thresholds that I said earlier for conversion of a native vegetation. And then from there, it's, I mean, they have to meet minimum requirements number 1 through 9, but then even that, there are within each minimum requirement, there's different calculations or thresholds. So flow control, for example, they could be subject to minimum requirements number 1 through 9, but if the project doesn't have 10,000 square feet of effective impervious surfaces, then they may not actually have to do anything for that. So it can get very specific.
Okay. Are there any other concerns that of stormwater that haven't been mitigated, or do you think that there's anything more to be done other than what's proposed or already has been done?
No, I would like to see the permit get issued so that they can do the mitigation that would be required.
Got it. Understood. So you think that this meets applicable stormwater requirements, and you think your review with what was submitted by applicants over the past, I believe it's 6 years, is adequate information to rely upon to make your opinion.
Yeah, the civil engineering was deemed adequate and approvable after my second review or third cycle of review on the permit. So the engineer had provided adequate information for me to approve the permit in terms of demonstrating compliance with all of the minimum requirements.
Okay, and then I know there's been talk about the easement, whether it's going to be developed or not. It's in the plans, and as proposed in the plans, it's it complies with code. It any environmental impacts will be mitigated, whether they do that work or not, it's compliant, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's adequate room within the easement to have the minimum required width for sheet flow dispersion, if that makes sense, which the ecology manual specifies that it is dependent on the width of the driveway. So, if it were a 20-foot wide road that they were building within the easement that is only 20 feet wide, there would not be an adequate room for stormwater mitigation and the creation of that, and they may need to seek additional easements or drainage.
But it within the permit
Yeah,
as
the
planned.
way as proposed with the width of the roadway shown, there would have been adequate room for stormwater mitigation per code if they were to choose to construct it.
Okay. And are there any other concerns about the single the home driveway, or if any changes were to be made, that would be another process, another permit, another plan site.
Essentially, I mean, we don't want to overregulate, right? If there's an existing driveway, what is it that we really need to review on that? If they're going to make modifications to it to a certain extent, they would be allowed to if it's just a maintenance activity. But if they're talking about paving it or regrading it entirely, depending on what the scope of work is, it may constitute, additional permits or review by my department.
Okay. I think that's all of my questions.
Okay,
Thank
thanks,
you.
Ms. Soda. All right, Mr. Durland, any questions?
Just two quick ones. First, thanks for testifying today, Ms. Olson. So I just have two for you. The first one is, did the applicants provide you with all the information you needed to review the project?
Yeah.
And you feel confident that the project complies with all codes and regulations as proposed?
I feel confident that it complies with Title 12 in the Stormwater Manual, but I'm not going to say all codes because I didn't review against all codes.
Understood. All right. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Okay, Mr. Clemenson, any final questions?
Yes, just some follow-ups on something that Minnesota asked Ms. Olson about. These are questions I wasn't inclined to bring up, but since the easement was mentioned, I feel I need to bring this up on this questioning now, and it's not going to go on too long. I don't want to belabor this. Ms. Olson, Samantha Long indicated to the lead appellant in September of 2022 that your approval actually did not include the easement at that time because of potentially fatal flaws with that part of the proposal per the Stormwater Design Manual. Do you share her concern that the road could not reside directly in the property line because the boundary fencing proposed by both the servient and dominant parcels sharing that line would have impeded the road?
That was not communicated to me.
Okay. Do you agree with Ms. Long's assertion the road would need to be placed down the middle of the easement if there wasn't enough room required, the natural vegetation on the downhill side to accept the sheet flow dispersion required?
I don't know if she saw the construction detail on the plans when she, I don't know, because that was not a discussion that her and I had. And if you look at the detail, It's a 20-foot wide easement, 8-foot lane. You know, 1 foot of the gravel shoulder. It seems adequate to me.
Okay. Was the assertion true that the north-south slope of the easement exceeds 20%, which precluded sheet flow dispersion indicated by the engineer and demanded specific geotechnical analysis that the applicants had not provided?
So the sheet flow dispersion would have gone east-west, not north-south.
Was she right to worry about the fact that this slope, in conjunction with the amount of cut and fill necessary to address it at that 20% excess area, would not have been possible within the 20-foot width of the easement while also satisfying dispersion requirements?
Can you repeat that?
Was Ms. Long right to worry that this slope, this 20% in excess slope, north-south, in conjunction with the amount of cut and fill necessary to address it, would not have been possible within the 20-foot width of the easement while also satisfying dispersion requirements?
It would not have been possible. I disagree.
Okay.
I'd like to object to how far into the easement these questions are going. It's beyond what I asked. I was asking in regards to Mr. Clemenson's original questions of the plans on the site plan, not about the slopes of easement and further development outside of the proposed plan.
So what was the purpose of your questions on that, Ms. Soda?
I was clarifying. Mr. Clemenson discussed he's making an argument that applicants say that they're not going to develop the easement, but it's still on the plans. And that can be added on later with the stamp of approval. But as proposed on the site plan, it's okay. Complies with code. And that's all I was trying to clarify.
Okay. All right. All right, Mr. Clemenson, do you have any more questions on that?
No. We're obviously these questions are just in response to the fact that if that had been on the plans, we would have been discussing all of this. But it came up in Minnesota's questions. Ms. Olson, were there any concerns that required stormwater controls per KCC 12.16 and 12.24 shifted the burden of the maintenance of those facilities from to this dominant tenement even on the servient parcel? In other words, how often do you find that in an easement, the dominant parcel that is developing it needs to maintain vegetation that they may not have a legal right in that easement to maintain?
Well, if it's part of, is it an access and utilities easement?
Just access.
Okay. So how often do I run into that? I mean, the line of questions, it's, what are you looking for? What do you need from me?
In other words, sheet flow dispersion was selected here. 8 feet of road, mm-hmm. then 1 foot filter strip, and then, you know, you've got the area that was at least to be cleared and then perhaps revegetated in the remainder of the easement.
Mm-hmm.
How does the DCD handle the clearing and replanting of the easement at that point? A, if the dominant parcel does not have the right to manage vegetation on the parcel, or B, does the servient parcel then become responsible for managing stormwater, that stormwater required strip?
So yeah, is this relevant to this, or is that more of like something that we should talk about? I don't know, that it really is a factor in the decision on this, if they're not exercising the easement here.
But this whole line of question gets to that. Yes, I know.
Yeah,
I
understand. So any parcel is obligated to accept drainage in the natural drainage pattern.
Okay. One last question, not related to the easement. We will all be happy to know. In regards to public comments, one of the running threads of those comments to the DCD was an alerting of the department that the clearing limits shown on the civil plans were underreported by the engineer. Would the comments on that subject have been considered relevant to the stormwater review?
Potentially. I don't know which comment that was or when it came in.
That's all I've got. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Olson. I know you must be very busy on other projects, and I really appreciate the time you took out to help us out today. Thanks for your testimony. It's very helpful.
Thank you.
So, thanks. All right, Mr. Clemenson, who is your next witness? Is that Mr. Heacock?
If we're going to hold off on Mrs. Edwards, Mr. Heacock's going to take up the, more bulk of time. So the question is, do we want to sort of blast through Mr. Heacock as much as we possibly can today, and try to expend all of that and get through SEPA, or do we want to do Mr. Heacock and then Mrs. Edwards and then back to Mr. Heacock? How would we prefer to handle this as a group?
I guess, yeah, Mr. Derlin, does Ms. Edwards want to get her testimony over with today, or can she wait until after Mr. Heacock's done?
I think so. I guess in general, I think she can wait until after Mr. Heacock. My understanding, so I guess first of all, I'm not sure how much more information she's going to be able to provide that Mr. Edwards didn't already. And so I think it'd probably just in terms of judicial efficiency, be better if we if you question Mr. Heacock, and then you can question Miss Edwards about any submissions or anything else related to that.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So we'll move ahead with Mr. Heacock till one, take our break at that, come back at two, keep going with him. So, all right, Mr. Heacock, come on up.
You. There he is. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, let's hear and see at this point. So let me swear you in once again. Just raise your right hand, swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding.
I do.
All right, great. Welcome back, Mr. Heacock and Mr. Clemenson. Go ahead.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to be sharing my screen. Mr. Heacock, are you able to see this screen share?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for being with us today. My questioning for you, Mr. Heacock, will be in three parts. First, about the history of the action. Second, about the review process. And the third and bulk of it will be about the SEPA determination.
Okay.
I aim to get through these questions as quickly as possible for the sake of all of our time. All right. Do you have a good recollection of the fully forested condition of the applicant's parcel as it existed in 2017 prior to the conversion?
I think so.
Okay. The first time you encountered the property was in February 2019 for the applicant's danger tree site visit. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm going to be pulling up Exhibit A300. We're looking at a photo at the near the entrance to the applicant parcel. This photo was taken in February of 2019, right at about the time you made your site visit. It was a particularly cold and snowy winter. You can see one of the Edwards gate posts there, the one just on the left side of the photo. So you'll recognize that's their entry.
There
Did
was no
you?
snow when I visited.
There was no snow at that time. Okay, you're lucky. Were you able to obtain a comprehensive analysis of the full forest?
Analysis. Well, we looked at, all the related trees. It was a danger tree permit. So what I typically do in a danger tree permit is look at the tree health, look generally for any kind of nests or any use of certainly eagles or herons, that kind of thing. But I think we just walked around the perimeter of the property and, determined as well as I recall that there was a group of cedar trees. At that time, there was a big brush. There's a there's a business that does brush cutting, and so for seasonal cedar boughs and things like that, there were brush cutters in the area. As I understood, the brush cutters were brought to the property. I don't know if you know, there was payment or things like that, but I had seen in other places before that brush cutters overdid it. So yeah, so I do recall that. I recall as well a grove of old Christmas trees, you know, up toward the north of the property. There were a few trees that looked like they were in poor health, that type of thing. So I don't know how germane that whole discussion might be in relation to what ended up happening in relation to code compliance. But what did happen was that code compliance became involved when we got we received complaints of grading activities, you know, outside of this. But in a danger tree permit, we would have typically conditions on the grading aspect where it would not exceed 7,000 square feet of grading, no stumping, tree removal also would be required to be connected with. We usually notified State Department of Natural Resources only because they get lots of calls. And then, of course, the aspect of once the harvest occurs for a danger tree, that they connect with state revenue. So all of that was done in the site visit, and all the details of the site visit, you know, were provided at that time. So it was a surprise when we received word that there was grading that had occurred on the property.
Okay, Mr. Higa, do you see, just when you're describing brush picking or shaving, the cedars that I'm pointing at right now have been shaved.
I cannot see that. I can't
tell. Okay. For reference, yes, these trees had already been shaved by this point to uh-huh. the top, okay. as you had noticed. Uh-huh. You also see that somebody had placed blue ribbons around the trees, roughly around the boundaries of the parcel.
I have no recollection of that. It was too long ago to remember.
Did you remember surveying really large old growth cedars that may have been in close range to the wetlands that had not been harvested 6 years earlier?
There was no old growth on the property.
Okay. Were you aware that two neighboring vacant forested parcels to the west were utilized like public parks for decades with established trail systems that allowed the public to view?
No, I have no idea of that.
Were you aware that the community beyond immediate neighbors might have knowledge and a connection to the forest's original state?
I have no knowledge of that.
Okay. How many acres of pasture did you find on the parcel during that visit?
I do not recall. There was definitely existing pastures, I think. They had goats. They had some chickens. They did have, I think, a sheep, but I don't remember exactly.
Okay. Based on the danger tree, we're looking at Exhibit A-159. This is a view of the west side from the appellant's parcels. This would have been 2017 prior to the conversion.
Okay.
Based on the danger tree visit, did you conduct the kind of analysis you would have in that site visit if you knew that entire north end of the forest, as seen central here, would be converted to pasture?
Oh, well, it would have been a different permit.
Okay, so it would have been you would have been looking for different things perhaps when you were doing a site visit at that time?
I wouldn't do a site visit for something if I knew it was going to be a grading permit. I don't do grading permit inspections. So they would apply, if the intent was to grade, that they would apply for a grading permit.
Okay. So you're familiar with FPAs, so Forest Practices Applications, the state DNR.
Sure. Yes.
So we're looking at one from 2018 for the applicant's parcel.
Okay.
I don't know if you recall this, but they had applied for a class three timber harvest from the DNR in 2018.
Okay. And here's what would happen with that. They didn't apply, or they weren't successful, because that would be a conversion. if this were the case. Or state DNR would say there's adjacent houses within a tree length and a half of where you want to remove these trees. So go to the local government and get a danger tree permit. So that's precisely what would happen if they had applied with the state, with state DNR. If you could go to the toward the last page, does it say intent to convert? Within 500 feet, an approved COHP. Nope. Keep going. Keep going. Hold on there. 4.5 acres. 300 or 30,000 board feet. Uneven aged, and it says not required. Says trees are removed under a thinning program reasonably expected to maximize long-term productivity. So by answering that, they are intending to do probably a class two or class three forest practices. And so the state would have reviewed that, would have looked at the aerial photography, would have seen the existing house, and then would have said, huh, you have existing neighbors around the perimeter. You have a house, and the tree length and a half would require that you work with your local government. And so go talk to your local government. So that's more than likely what happened. Is there an informal conference note by chance in the document itself?
No, but okay. We'll get to... we'll get later on.
If I could,
yeah,
they didn't do this. So does it make sense to belabor this? They didn't do this. Could we get to the matter?
Yes. Did the applicants ask you any questions about conversion or stump removal up front, including at your site?
No. Design? No.
Okay. Had Eileen from the DNR indicated to you or to the DZ at any time that during her discussions with them that they indeed intended to convert?
Not that I'm aware of.
Was an arborist report or letter required for a danger tree permit at the time?
No.
I'm going to pull up A17. This is a meeting setup made by Kim Dunn, code compliance officer. This was August 12th, 2019. So yep. She was setting up a meeting for you guys to discuss what to do about the violation.
Okay.
You'll note in here that she said the applicant essentially was given clear guidelines on what he could do, and he was way outside of what he was approved for.
Okay.
Had you told the applicants that the danger tree permit requires replanting the trees removed?
It would for a danger tree, yes.
And so you would have conveyed that to them.
Uh-huh.
And you would have also conveyed to them the danger tree permit only allows for ground disturbance or stump removal under 7,000 square feet.
Correct.
And also the 150 feet of habitable structure rule as well.
Well, it's tree length and a half, not 150 feet. So if there are larger trees, they can do a larger cut. I did provide them with what I felt was a revised perimeter based on the site visit. So
sure, we'll take a look at that here shortly.
Saw that, yeah.
A18. So I'm jumping ahead to the stop work order because it illuminates the note that you had originally made here in bold. This is what you had sent them in terms of the DOR letter and such.
Uh huh.
You noted that that snagging was an option for the trees that had been shaved.
Uh-huh, sure.
Did they have any reaction to your suggestion upon that when you mentioned that to them?
I don't recall.
Okay. The danger tree application that they had submitted indicated there were no critical areas or associated buffers on their property or adjacent ones. Uh-huh. Had you noted them on your site visit?
I don't recall seeing a wetland on site.
Is it something normally you would check for upon coming
Oh,
to a
yeah.
site evaluation?
Sure.
So we're looking for the danger tree permit. This was a letter submitted in support of that, submitted by the applicants,
Oh, okay.
indicating that in response to Kathleen Barnhart's concerns about the proximity of potential
Oh,
graveyards,
okay.
that they had indicated they would not remove any trees within 250 feet. Were you
Yeah.
familiar with this letter at the time?
I don't think so.
Okay. Let me pull up A6. You might have seen this one. This was the site map submitted for the danger tree permit.
Okay. All
So
right.
hand drawn, you'll see it shows the trees are circled, but the ones that are circled darker are the areas that were to be removed, and that helped
Oh,
illuminate for
okay.
you what
Yep.
they intended to remove, correct?
Sure.
Okay. And they'd added a note, setback for tree removal be greater than 250 feet from the wetland area.
Okay.
Following that, you mentioned you had created one based on the parcel viewer. Yep.
Okay.
So this is the email that you had sent. This is for the information for the revenue folks.
Okay.
But you had also attached this site map that had shown it had drawn a little more clearly than the hand-drawn one.
Yep. Yep.
Correct. Do you recognize that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you supply this approved site map to delineate the extent of the tree removal approved?
Well, that was the intent, is to provide a little better guidance on their map. I used a lot of their map and then the field visit. Yeah.
Okay. You know, when you see this now, tree removal on the western and northern boundaries was not approved.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. If the applicants were made well aware of the limitations of the permit, did they ever explain to you why they didn't stop the logging operator when it became clear that they were?
I'd object to this
clear
line of questioning. I think Mr. Edwards is very clear, and we went over this for, I think, about an hour, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I have no recollection nor, communication other than once I eventually went out to the site to see what had been done, I was surprised for sure and really surprised about the stumping. And as I stated in the SEPA decision, it was imparted to me, and I have no reason to doubt that the contractor had stumped without knowledge that they couldn't stump. So that then led us to requiring the grading permit and the co-compliance and all of those matters.
Had you informed the applicants about whether or not they could burn slash piles as part of this?
I don't recall mentioning about slash.
Okay. All right. I am going to pull up A33.
Okay.
This is an email, Mr. Heacock, that you sent to
okay.
Edwards and Sean O'Leary. Is CC'd on it. And so you'd gone out after receiving complaints about the overclearing and the grading and did a site visit and then followed up with this email. Did you indicate to the applicants during the site visit that they were in violation due to the excessive clearing and soil disturbance?
I don't do co-compliance.
Okay. But you visited the parcel.
Oh yeah.
Did you talk to anybody that day? Did you say, hey, this is
I
what
don't
I'm saying?
Think anyone was there.
You don't think anybody was there?
I don't believe so.
You did note that the stumps were primarily still in place at the time of the inspection.
So. I think, again, I don't remember. It's been so long ago.
Okay. All right.
I was very surprised.
Okay. Gotcha. So after the discovery that this would probably at this point be a code compliance violation, you followed up with them with this email indicating to them, was there any consideration at the time of putting in a stop work order?
I think co-compliance sent a development engineering inspector to do the stop work. Again, I don't do co-compliance. I don't post stop work orders. I am not a co-compliance officer.
Understood. In 2019, DCD supervisor Sean O'Leary arranged an in-person meeting with the eventual lead appellant, myself, to discuss the matter. And he indicated you were nervous about joining that meeting in his office. Why would you be nervous?
I have no idea. I wouldn't be nervous.
Were you aware of any potential timber trespass issues by that time?
I have no idea.
Okay. I'm going to go on to A12. So this is a photograph from August 11th, 2019. This would have been after that site visit that had surprised you. So this essentially would have been closer to the completion of the project.
Okay.
So this occurred over 4 months, correct?
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea.
Okay. This photo is 2 months later, 2019. So this is close to the wetlands area, towards the western edge of the applicant's parcel.
Yeah.
The applicant had pledged not to touch any trees, regardless of stumps, within 250 feet of a wetland. In your experience, when you find clearing like this, are these accidents?
They can be accidents for people that don't know what wetlands are. Yes.
Okay.
So you can't put my head into, you know, the contractor or the applicant or what have you. The fact is this did happen. And what do we do to rectify it? We required the grading permit. We can move right along here. If you ask me. That then we got a grading permit. We required a wetland report. We required a mitigation plan. We required it to be replanted. They conformed even during the stop work, because the stop work isn't lifted until we actually get to the point of having a approvable application. So they did all of that. They implemented the planting plan and all of that. So I mean, I was pleased once I went back out to see that they had rectified this this violation, this part. Okay.
So the reason I'm asking the questions is because it actually gets to a sentence that you wrote in your SEPA determination.
Okay. And what is that?
I can pull up A22 or F26. If the sentence is the same, I'll pull up F26
which SEPA decision?
So I'll pull up the final one. The sentence is the same
in both. Because we did rescind the first.
You did. This sentence was the same in both. Essentially, the conversion into additional pastures was completed by a contractor that was not aware of the
permits. That was what was relayed to us. Yes.
Okay. So why did you mention that?
It seemed to be a note that was important. That is what we were told by the applicant, that they hired a forester or whoever it was, dirt work contractor. I don't know who it was. I don't recall, but that's what we were relayed. So it made sense to include that as a statement of how these things happened and then what we're doing to rectify it. It's a typical detail in a SEPA decision for something that's an after the fact to try to relay how this could have possibly happened, and then what we're going to do and provide as conditions within the permit. So we have very general understandings of the, you know, the amount of clearing that was additional clearing that occurred. As you can see, we said approximately 3.7 acres of an approximate 7.14 acre site. We don't know exactly these numbers. It's not a matter for a fine magnifying glass to say it's 3.7 or 3.2 or 3.6. We try to approximate. The whole point is that we want to issue a SEPA decision that's going to rectify in this particular kind of situation that the stormwater type, the stormwater method, and then that we require monitoring and maintenance of the wetland / stream buffer, that those are conditions of approval. And then, as you can see further down in the SEPA decision, that we noted the comments in relation to a local group, and we did not address every single comment because many of the comments were very similar and just were just basically saying they were upset about the tree clearing. Of course, that was called something else in most estimations. It was entitled clear cutting. This is, you know, a grading permit. It's a type 2 grading permit. We had stormwater review for the grading quantity. It's the correct type of permit. It was incorrectly done as a type 1, if you ask me, but that did get rectified, which was good. And then so, you know, we talk about functional screening and things like that in the SEPA decision. So
we'll get to those, certainly. So when you're writing about the description of the project and writing a sentence like that, that's the background information. Do you feel there's any obligation to the DCD to verify the information from the applicant provided in that?
I don't have any reason to doubt the applicant.
Did the applicants not have ample opportunity over the 4 months to stop the violation in process?
I would think they would have had ample opportunity. I can't answer that.
Okay. If the applicants were indicating to Mr. Heacock and several of the specialists that they worked with for these submittals that the clearing was truly accidental, was there any discussion with you or others that they would replant? In other words, actually move forward with the requirements of the danger tree permit?
No.
All right, back to the time of the violation. We're going to go back to A18. This is the stop work order letter.
Uh-huh, okay. A code compliance put it together, yep.
So did Sean O'Leary and Kim Dunn alert to you to this?
I don't remember. I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. The questions regarding clearing limits in this case, what I don't know if you were listening to testimony by Ms. Olson, but we were talking about the clearing limits, Sean.
Uh-huh.
And one of the points of contention that have come up in this permit generally is the designations of the engineer as to what had been cleared, what had not been cleared. Did the engineer underreport the clearing, uh-huh, and so forth?
Yep.
You've dealt with aspects of the site plan over many of the reviews through this, and it became a running theme, especially in 2023 and 2024. At what point in the permit review process did you realize that there are inconsistencies and perhaps maybe errors in those plans?
Probably the second cycle.
Okay. Did you or any DCD staff conduct another site visit or analysis of photography to specifically determine if the cleared areas declared on the site plans at least included what was actually cleared in 2019?
I don't recall.
Okay. Did you ever become aware that some of the areas on the cleared by the applicants, particularly on the eastern side, near the home site, were not declared within the clearing limit boundaries on the plans?
I don't know. Not sure.
Okay. Have the applicants removed any additional trees on the parcel since the stop work order?
I don't know.
In the course of your environmental review, are you concerned with the total amount of acreage converted or cubic yardage disturbed?
Only in relation to the specifics of the permit type. And that's why I felt it was important to correct an error that this would be processed as a type one. So I was pleased that we had, even though we issued a SEPA decision for the type one permit, we did rescind it because of discussions that we had internally and felt that it was more accurate to say, hey, let's send an actual notice of application as that's required in a type two site development activity permit. So we did so, and then of course copied all of the interested parties. The difficulty was that in a type one decision, the only we don't in a type one decision send a notice of application out for receiving comments. So we receive comments throughout time of the grading one permit, just as from 2022 through 2023. I think in, what's the last one? October, no, here's some Novembers of 2023. People, you know, commenting and providing, you know, feedback and questions, et cetera, and so forth. So so the original SEPA decision, which is not germane to this, we rescinded it, so it's no longer applicable. But the particular SEPA decision that I wrote in relation to the type two grading permit was correct. Correct grading quantity, correct action, generally defining the area that had been harvested, the correct grading methodology for collecting stormwater, all of those things, and then conditioning. So, and the fact that we conditioned all of these matters together within the SEPA decision. And not only did we condition it in a general way, but we also used what's called SEPA subject authority on page two of the conditions. And we used SEPA subject authority under item five of the SEPA decision, which we authorize under 1804.200.D. Three, that we are reviewing per the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan, that we're asking for following the rural character guidelines. And this was because most of the direct comments from neighbors were about concerns about headlight glare. And so that's precisely why we included planting requirements for those specific people that raised concerns in relation to this application, for that matter.
Thank you. When you visited the property for the danger tree permit, was it your duty or obligation or care to examine the contours of the earth through that area? That wasn't your interest, right?
I did not observe any steep slopes or anything like that on the site.
You didn't, in other words, you weren't looking for cut and fill areas, you know, any significant irregularities, giant holes.
There's no cut and fill in a danger tree permit.
Okay. Yeah. So you weren't looking for that. All right. From here, this questioning is going to touch upon several specific subject areas regarding the permit. First being your involvement in the process, Mr. Heacock. Uh-huh. These questions will move chronologically through the events so we can understand how the permit was approved.
Okay.
Although the applicant's plan, they did drop the second entrance associated with this project. It still remains mentioned in the permit's conditions with guidance for its future development. Can you briefly describe, No reason to belabor it. Your role in evaluating the proposed development of the easement area in this permit in relation to how it you were evaluating SEPA and everything else.
Uh-huh. Well, as it was throughout time, unclear whether or not that easement would be used, we had suggested, and as a component of the additional thing that we found in the second submittal, was that it appeared that there was some kind of farm structure. I do recall in the site evaluation that they had placed, or there was a discussion about a barn. So it's like, okay, oh, I see you have livestock. There's a barn. Are you thinking about doing it, further kinds of activities? Of course, a barn would be well beneath 7,000 square feet of disturbed area. So I didn't think anything of it in relation to the site evaluation. I assume what people are telling me is the truth when I'm going out there. So I don't have any, you know, reason to doubt. So there was the barn. We had discussed, oh yes, there are some trees right around the barn, some maple trees. I felt that that was okay to remove some of those maple trees that were right by the barn. And so that was included in the danger tree perimeter that we had discussed out on the site. Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is a SEPA related question. In September 2022, you identified in this email that you can see here that there was no compelling reason for that easement road to exist, and you identified it as a spite use.
Maybe. Don't know.
Your fellow reviewer, Jeff Smith, concurred in Exhibit A47. We're looking at A45 right now.
Uh-huh. Yep.
At this time, were you considering the development of the easement on the SEPA ramifications for the larger project?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to move on now to Exhibit A57. Blow this up a little bit here, make it easier for you to read. So this is an email, Mr. Heacock, that you sent to Jeff Smith, Cecilia Olson. This was November 1st, 2023.
Okay.
At this point, you say he, and this would be referring to Mr. Edwards, I believe, should be aware that we cannot process SEPA until the official site plan is revised to reflect that the easement is not being used for future internal road.
Okay, sure.
In other words, it was sort of holding up the process.
Yeah.
Did you ultimately determine, however, that there's no basis for the SEPA determination to consider the easement development despite this request for clarification?
Could you repeat that?
Sorry. In other words, later on in the review process, did you ultimately determine that there was no basis for the SEPA determination to be held up on the easement development?
Yeah, right.
Okay. So what led you to that conclusion?
Well, the main conclusion was that the easement right, they had right to use the easement. If they're going to use that easement, it's fine. But in relation to SEPA, we felt it was important to create that if they did in fact use the easement, that the associated trees would be a potential impact for rural enjoyment by neighbors. And so therefore we suggested at that time that there would be a replanting strip that would be included. And that effort then had occurred with the farm management plan to provide what we would call a hedgerow planting in the USDA specifications for a hedgerow buffer, right? And the idea of the buffer would be that it would, should the trees adjacent and within the easement be removed, that the associated hedgerow planting then would reduce impacts from headlight glare.
Okay, so it is in your determination then that the easement and the state of the vegetation in it, more importantly, are relevant to SEPA conditioning on the primary parcel.
Yes, correct.
Okay. If so, then did you not later decide to not to enforce screening buffers along the full north-south western boundary? We're talking like 300-400 feet. Did you decide not to enforce screening buffers along the full north-south western boundary of the applicant's parcel because the vegetation in that neighboring easement's southerly locations is thicker? In other words, there's a forest there. Did that factor into your consideration?
Sure.
Okay. Moving on to exhibit A30. These, once again, these are the only representation the appellants have of the final conditions listed in the permit. You'll recognize them from coming straight from the website.
Oh, sure.
And this is the final conditions, not the previous acceptances that went out.
Okay.
So I'm going to go on down here to the... I can find it here again with my bad eyeballs. I'm going to bring it right to the top. Here we are. So in the gray area here, did you have a role in determining how to craft the condition listed in the approved permit about the requirement of another SDAP if the easement was developed in the future?
Sure.
Okay. What was the reasoning behind that condition?
Because if it were then determined that that were to be used, it may be a trigger for a grading permit. The other thing that could potentially have happened would be that there would be either an addendum or revision to the permit as a permit's being processed. If something changes, then there are revisions. Revisions happen all the time. So we had suggested that that gravel drive easement, if it were to be exercised as at a later date, that it would, well, worst case, require the site development activity permit, right?
Yeah. What SEPA considerations were involved in that condition, if any, specific to SEPA?
In relation to rural. To impacts actually for offsite potential impacts.
Okay, understood. Okay, also related to the process of the permits, the notes for the permit, and I can bring up the notes, Mr. Heacock, if you want, they're exhibit A27, but I'll describe it for you briefly. You might remember. You and planner Jeff Smith became aware in the middle of 2023 that there was a second code compliance case open on the applicant's parcel involving a garage and ADU. Was it your inclination at the time to delay the SEPA decision on the SDAP until it could incorporate the ADU if the applicants decided to move forward and formally permit the ADU rather than remove it?
Yes, because the ADU would require a conditional use permit typically. That was what we had discussed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is the level of an SDAP determined by the amount of cubic yards of dirt moved in the proposal? I mean, is that fairly standard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Site disturbing activity. Yeah.
Okay. I think we've hit the 1 o'clock point at this point. So let's take our lunch break. We'll see you at 2:00.
Thank you.